Thank you. I'm glad you said that. It's a nice segue for what I want to lead off with, which is it's very nice to see everyone here. When I started giving these talks before we had a section, I gave a talk to two people one morning at 9 o'clock on a Wednesday. And as the founding member membership chair of what was once a SPIG and now a section, we started by calling everyone I know and telling them to fill out the form so we could petition to become one day a section. And so I think the participation in the audience now is representative that we have found a home and that we are hopefully serving the needs of the constituents by presenting this research. So I hope to continue that here. Let me get my timer here because I hate going over. All right. So I want to disclose I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation. If you have any you would like to offer me, call. I would love this to be a different slide next year. Exactly. There's not a lot of money in physical activity. It's just we just give it away for free. I do want to acknowledge the individuals and the participating organizations that provided data. The data I will be presenting come from the International Children's Accelerometry Database. You see the number of funders here and the study participants from the studies I'd like to also acknowledge. So you see all the studies listed here. Not all of them were involved in the data that I will be presenting, but they were all involved in this effort from which we were able to pull these data. So my objectives are to describe physical activity levels and cardiometabolic risk factors in youth. I'm going to kind of cheat to do that. I'll show you why. I'm going to describe time spent in physical activity by intensity in youth and describe associations between vigorous physical activity, adiposity, and cardiometabolic risk factors in youth. One disclosure I didn't give, which I think everybody should disclose this as well, I think vigorous is a very different dose of physical activity than leisure, light or moderate leisure time physical activity, and so my bias was that we would find something. So, a little bit of introduction. It's a bias. So current physical activity guidelines for youth are that 60 minutes or more of daily physical activity should be at least moderate. And so this is very important, and there's a reason why I want to show this slide, is that we recommend that the most of the 60 minutes or more should be moderate or vigorous intensity aerobic physical activity. You should, we recommend that they do vigorous physical activity at least 3 days per week, but it's not recommended that they do it daily. So what we're saying is that they should get 60 minutes or more. It should include some vigorous, but we make no specific recommendations about how much vigorous we should be encouraging in children. And one thing you have to understand, there's a little bit of slide in what intensity means as individuals age. So for children, vigorous activity does not, moderate activity does not include walking. Walking would fall into the light category. With adults, because we don't do anything, moderate walking is moderate activity because we sit around so much. So there's a little bit of a discrepancy here in the way that we define this. But you can think about this in the sense that children, in my opinion, are naturally movement-oriented. If you've ever seen a three-year-old, they're kind of like those old wind-up cars you'd have when you were a kid where you turn the battery on and they take off, and that's how three-year-olds are. They're always moving, and you put them down, and they go do stuff. And so as we get older, we become less and less active and more sedentary until you get to the point where many of us are today where we sit in front of the computer for 10 hours. So at that point, anything's good. For kids, there is a different relationship. So kids are not little adults. And so the recommendations are that we encourage young people to participate in activities that are age appropriate, enjoyable, and offer variety. I think that's good for all of us. So the benefits of physical activity are well established, but we know very little bit about the relationship between physical activity intensity and markers of cardiometabolic health in youth. And so what I mean by that is, in terms of cardiometabolic health, there are a lot of markers that we have. I'm saying, a while ago, you don't hear about things like metabolic syndrome much anymore. It's fallen out of favor. It was highly controversial, how you define it. But these are markers that are predictive of later declines in health, predictive of heart disease and some cancers. And so You know, if you look at the reviews on vigorous physical activity, are quite amazing. In that there, we know a lot less than we think we know. I learned when I was a postdoctoral fellow many years ago that sometimes the things that we say over and over again aren't actually in the literature. A prime example was, when I was studying, they talked about, muscle burns more calories than fat. And I was like, I kept saying that. And as a trainer, I tell people that. You look it up, you can't find any support for that. But it comes from the old school that back when we thought that fat cells were just big old balloons full of energy stores instead of being metabolically active, which we know now. And so, there are a lot of things that you think you know, and then you go look for it and you can't find it. So we're in the process of submitting a review paper, and we couldn't really even find any intervention studies around vigorous physical activity and biomarkers in youth. So everything we have right now is cross-sectional, like I will be presenting today. We do know that vigorous physical activity is negatively associated with adiposity and weight status and positively associated with cardiorespiratory fitness. And published a paper last year, 2 years ago, showing this in middle school kids, where it was quite remarkable the differences in fitness with relatively low levels of vigorous activity, to the extent in middle school kids where everything goes, scientifically, I believe the word is, goes to hell in terms of physical activity levels. Something as low as about four, our median split was at 4 minutes of vigorous activity per day, and there was a significant, a meaningful difference in the fitness levels between those achieving more than that or less than that. And so a little bit goes a long way, especially as we become more sedentary. This is not necessarily true for the younger kids that do more, as I mentioned. So the association of the biomarkers with vigorous physical activity in the literature is equivocal, but much of this is because they're very small sample sizes. Primary data collection where you don't have any money, this is extremely expensive stuff. If you're going to take kids in and get venipuncture to get some of the stuff like triglycerides is extremely expensive. Kids don't like to get stuck with needles for free. And then assessment of vigorous physical activity in a relatively accurate way usually requires some sort of technology, an accelerometer, heart rate monitor, something like that. And those are expensive because children tend to lose them. So the ICANN, very briefly, if you're not familiar with the database and you like to do research without having to collect your own data, please look them up because they're extremely friendly. The application process is very easy, and they've done a lot of the heavy lifting for you. And so what they've done is they've taken the partners, they contributed data, they cleaned and distilled them down, they've standardized the cut points, and so the data are relatively ready to go. There's still some cleaning involved, but you have a very pan-world sample here with 32,000 young people, 3 through 18 across Europe, the U.S., Brazil, and Australia. So there are a number of cardiometabolic markers which vary by study. The ones that were interesting for us were adiposity, lipids, both cholesterol and triglycerides, blood pressure, glucose, and insulin. So I told you I was going to cheat. Here it is. I'm going to show someone else's paper. Ulf Ekelund et al., the leader of the ICAD study, found that MVPA in youth was associated with better cardiometabolic risk factors regardless of the amount of sedentary time. And so this is independent controlling for sedentary time. And what they found in terms of minutes per day for sedentary and MVPA in boys and girls, and this is a large sample. This does not exactly match up with our analytic sample because we excluded on different things. But they published this and showed that about 350 minutes per day of sedentary time. These kids are sitting around a lot. In terms of MVPA, we're looking at 37 and 24 minutes, so a big difference by sex. And so when you think about this, remember the recommendation is 60 minutes of MVPA per day. These children are not achieving that. We published a paper using a primary data set, had very similar results in a sample of children from North Carolina. And we tried to do a sub-analysis based upon reviewer three. It's always reviewer three, who wanted to know how many kids were meeting the recommendation. There were so few kids meeting the recommendation, we couldn't even do the analyses. I just want to highlight that, this being a very broad cross-section of children from around the world, we're seeing very similar thing, very robust, very sad finding. So, you know, our objective here was to determine the independent association of BPA. And so the accelerometer data were taken from 11,588 children from 11 studies in the ICAD. And we looked at the metabolic risk factors in four categories of BPA per minute using quantile regression modeling, controlling for age, sex, wear time, sedentary minutes per day, moderate minutes per day. And we did this at the 10th, 25th, 50th, 75th, and 90th percentile of the distribution. For those of you who don't like statistics and are not statistically inclined, this type of regression is a least squares method, and it simply allows us to estimate slopes at different levels. So think about regression 101. You estimate one slope, one line. This allows us at the different quantiles to estimate different slopes, so we allow the slope to vary by the category. And so that's really all it is. It sounds really fancy, and everybody loves it now, but it's kind of like, you know, pumpkin spice. But so we used meta-analytical techniques to pull the relationships across studies. We looked at waist circumference, blood pressure, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, insulin, and the categories were VPA were none, low, so median of 2.9 minutes per day, medium about 11 minutes per day, and high 25 minutes per day. And so there is quite a bit of variability in our categories, and that will become important. So these were the studies who contributed data. It's on the handout if you're really, really interested. But once again, I just put this here so you can see that we have a number of countries represented with a good amount of diversity in that, so in Haynes being one of our contributions. So you can't read this. I'll tell you what it says. These are the risk factors by study. I once again put this at the bottom. You can see the number of studies, or sorry, the number of markers contributed by the study. And so not every study contributed every marker. But if you go across, you see, you know, top to bottom, blood pressure was in 10 studies, cholesterol was in 7, glucose in 6, waist circumference, insulin, triglycerides, 7, 7, and 8. And so we did, once again, have good representation across the studies. Results. So across the risk factors, and independent of sedentary and moderate time, a dose-response relationship was observed for waist circumference and fasting insulin. And so if you look at waist circumference, high, medium, and low VPA levels were associated with a reduction of 2 centimeters at the 90th percentile. So these are for the heavier kids. So think about waist circumference being the more adipose tissue in the kids, if you believe it measures that. So at the higher end, so that the kids with more adipose tissue, there was a stronger relationship observed. So heavier the kids were, the more vigorous mattered. And you see that as well for fasting insulin. So for the individuals with higher levels of fasting insulin, vigorous activity had a stronger relationship in those kids. For those who are more table inclined, you see the pooled effects here. So, you know, very simply, this shows the pooled random effects for waist circumference in centimeters and insulin there. And you see the for low vigorous physical activity, which was once again, you know, about 2 to 3 minutes per day, for moderate vigorous activity, so about that 11, you see the relationships at the higher end of the spectrum. So once again, for the kids who had a higher level of body fat, we see the stronger relationship with a moderate amount of vigorous activity, and then we see that range expand. So once again, for high levels of vigorous, for the kids who are, you know, in less need, if you want to say, the relationships start to pick up there at the bottom. For those of you who hate looking at numbers, here's a picture. So if you look at the high vigorous by the solid black dots, the moderate in the middle and the low, you see as they are the children in a higher quantile of waist circumference, the effects become stronger. And once again, this makes intuitive sense that for the heavy kids, it's better for them to engage in the vigorous activity. You don't see the relationships very much in the leaner kids. And so as the leaner kids, you know, the moderate and vigorous is pretty much, this has the same effect. And once again, for fasting insulin, similar story. It happens at the higher levels But once again, we do see the dose response relationship between low, moderate, and high. So what does this mean? This is the first study of the scope to examine vigorous physical activity in a diverse and biomarkers a diverse sample of youth. Got a lot of kids in there, a good diversity across samples, but it's cross-sectional. We do not have any idea if these things are going to hold up to intervention. So if we took kids who had high waist circumference and exposed them to a dose of vigorous activity equivalent to what we had here. So we said we're going to give you 11 minutes or 25 minutes of vigorous activity a day. We have no idea if that would actually impact and change over time. It's a sad truth of epidemiological research is a lot of times it does not hold up to training studies and does not hold up longitudinally. And so we just don't know. And we don't have dietary information. You know, when I was watching my co-presenter present earlier about bone density, which we did not measure here, I thought about a study that was conducted where I was a postdoc where they looked at intervention of vigorous activity and showed that they had a relationship between vigorous activity and bone density, but only in the kids who had a high level of calcium. And so for those who did not have calcium intake, there was no relationship. Same thing here. You know, these may, we didn't have dietary data to control for at all, but it could be that there are certain components of the diet that have an interactive effect with the vigorous dose. And so, you know, that is distinctly a possibility. You know, risk factors tend to co-vary. And so, you know, people who drink also more likely to smoke, more likely to sit around, and all this. So there, that could happen here in terms of dietary intake. Also, we don't have genetic data. You know, fitness is a great marker, but it is highly genetically tied. So, you know, fit parents tend to have fit kids, which, you know, independent of their behavior, which is why, you know, since we're in New Orleans, I use the Manning family as an example. There's a skill-based thing, skill, speed, things like that tend to be genetic as well. And so if you are an NFL quarterback, you're more likely to have NFL quarterbacks. So, conclusions. VPA may have unique physiological health benefits above those conveyed by MVPA. So MVPA good. MVPA, obviously you saw the stuff I didn't talk about. It's because vigorous did not have an independent effect. So all the stuff that I didn't talk about, blood pressure lipids, there's no relationship. So vigorous in that case was important. Not being sedentary was important. And so, you know, the message of 60 minutes of MVPA is great, but, you know, much like the, you know, the old school food pyramid said you need a couple servings of this, you might argue that we need a couple servings of vigorous sprinkled into that 60 minutes. So, you know, maybe 20 minutes of the 60, so one-third of it, should be focused on highly active things. So we say play 60, you know, as NFL's PR campaign, we may say, you know, play 60, but run 20 of those, you know, bike 20 of those, swim 20 of those, that kind of thing. But as little as 11 minutes may have benefit, which is why I kind of like the one-third model, because if they shoot for 20 and they get 11, they're still doing kind of good. And so we might want to think about that when we revisit the recommendations down the road, that, you know, maybe saying that 60 is great and a subset of that should be vigorous. But once again, these are cross-sectional. There are a lot of people there. But, you know, everything that holds up cross-sectionally does not hold up in the future. So we need to do an intervention study like the one I'm writing that should be funded. So if you would like more information, you can reach us on our website, Policy to Practice and Youth Programs. Is where we deposit our curricula and evidence-based strategies to increase physical activity. We're primary intervention people, so if you're interested in more information about that or this particular study, let me know. No, get up. No, seriously. All right. No, please sit. You're embarrassing me. It depends on the contributing study. So as I mentioned before, there are a lot of different studies I think some of the older ones go back into the 90s up to relatively recent. I think as recent as maybe 2012. So it spans a pretty wide range.
And is there a way through the internet and the data set that you use to take out the United States to look at the other
countries? Yeah. Yeah, all their documentation is freely available. The data you have to apply. It's a very simple application. It's 2 pages, and they're relatively quick in getting back to grant you access to the data. That being said, the documentation's up there, and you can see that you could strip out, you could do it by study individually or whatever. So if you want to compare U.S. to Australian to European, you could do that. So there is a lot of flexibility. I know when we were putting together the application, we requested a pretty broad panel. However, I don't think those are represented in too many studies, and which is the reason why we didn't want to have a built-in bias that, the only subset that had like hemoglobin A1C was the, children from Denmark or something. So I can't answer that question, but I know, once again, the documentation is freely available. The data dictionary is up. And so you could find out very quickly if it's worth trying to ask for a pull.
Okay.